On a snow-swept January evening of 1991, Jonathan Pine, the English night manager of the Hotel Meister Palace in Zurich, forsook his office behind the reception desk and, in the grip of feelings he had not known before, took up his position in the lobby as a prelude to extending his hotel's welcome to a distinguished late arrival. The Gulf War had just begun. Throughout the day, news of the Allied bombings, discreetly relayed by the staff, had caused consternation on the Zurich Stock Exchange. Hotel bookings, which in any January were low, had sunk to crisis levels. Once more in her long history, Switzerland was under siege. But the Meister Palace was equal to the challenge. Over all Zurich, Meister, as the hotel was affectionately known to taxi drivers and habitués, presided, physically and traditionally alone, a staid Edwardian aunt, perched on her own hilltop, gazing down on the folly of hectic urban life. The more things changed in the valley, the more Meister stayed herself, unbending in her standards, a bastion of civilized style, in a world intent on going to the devil. Jonathan's point of vantage was a small recess between the hotel's two elegant showcases, both of them displaying ladies' fashions. Adele, of the Bahnhofstrasse, was offering a sable stole over a female dummy, whose only other protection was a gold bikini bottom and a pair of coral earrings, price on application to the concierge. The clamour against the use of animal furs these days is as vocal in Zurich as in other cities of the Western world, but the Meister Palace paid it not a blind bit of notice. The second showcase, by César, likewise of the Bahnhofstrasse, preferred to cater for the Arab taste, with a tableau of lusciously embroidered gowns and diamante turbans and jewelled wristwatches at 60,000 francs a shot. Flanked by these wayside shrines to luxury, Jonathan was able to keep a crisp eye on the swing doors. He was a compact man, but tentative, with a smile of apologetic self-protection. Even his Englishness was a well-kept secret. He was nimble and in his prime of life. If you were a sailor, you might have spotted him for another, recognized the deliberate economy of his movements, the caged placing of his feet, one hand always for the boat. He had trim, curled hair and a pugilist's thick brow. The pallor of his eyes caught you by surprise. You expected more challenge from him, heavier shadows. And this mildness of manner within a fighter's frame gave him a troubling intensity. You would never, during your stay in the hotel, confuse him with anybody else, not with Herr Stripley, the creamy-haired front-of-house manager, not with one of Herr Meister's superior young Germans, who strode through the place like gods on their way to stardom somewhere else. As a hotelier, Jonathan was complete. You did not wonder who his parents were, or whether he listened to music, or kept a wife and children, or a dog. His gaze as he watched the door was steady as a marksman's. He wore a carnation. At night he always did. The snow, even for the time of year, was formidable. Fat billows swept across the lighted forecourt like white waves in a tempest. The chasseurs, alerted for a grand arrival, stared expectantly into the blizzard. Roper will never make it, Jonathan thought. Even if they let his plane take off, it can never have landed in this weather. Herr Kaspar has got it wrong. But Herr Kaspar, the head concierge, had never got anything wrong in his life. When Herr Kaspar breathed, "Arrival imminent," over the internal speaker, only a congenital optimist could imagine that the client's plane had been diverted. Besides, why else would Herr Kaspar be presiding at this hour, except for a big spender? There was a time, Frau Loring had told Jonathan, when Herr Kaspar would maim for 2 francs and strangle for 5. But old age is a different state. These days only the richest pickings were able to lure Herr Kaspar from the pleasures of his evening television. "Hotel's full up, I'm afraid, Mr. Roper," Jonathan rehearsed, in another last-ditch effort to fend off the inevitable. Herr Meister is desolated. A temporary clerk has made an unpardonable error. However, we have managed to obtain rooms for you at the Bar au Lac, etc. But that wishful fantasy, too, was stillborn. There was not a great hotel in Europe tonight that boasted more than 50 guests. The wealthiest of the earth were bravely hugging the ground, with the one exception of Richard Onslow Roper, trader of Nassau in the Bahamas. Jonathan's hands stiffened, and he instinctively flicked his elbows as if to ready them for combat. A car, a Mercedes by its radiator, had entered the forecourt, the beams of its headlights choked with swirling snowflakes. He saw Herr Caspar's senatorial head lift, and the chandelier glint on its pomaded rivers. But the car had parked on the far side of the forecourt, a taxi, a mere city cab, a no one. Herr Caspar's head, now glowing with acrylic light, sank forward as he resumed his study of the closing stock prices. In his relief, Jonathan allowed himself a ghostly smile of recognition. The wig, the immortal wig, Herr Caspar's 140,000-franc crown, the pride of every classic concierge in Switzerland. Herr Caspar's William Tell of a wig, Frau Loring called it, the wig that had dared to raise itself in revolt against the millionaire despot Madame Archetti.